Brother Jim, share with us a little bit about the Philippines. Lord bless you.
Thank you, Pastor Jim. Deb and I have been serving in the Philippines since 1989. So through that time, we started out in language school. We then worked in church planting. In 94, we went down to the city of Butuan, where we started teaching in a Bible college. We worked there until 2002. We're on the year of home assignment. In 2003, we moved to the city of Manila. Estimates range anywhere from 14 to 18 million for the size of that city. So it's been a challenge for us to coming from rural Iowa and rural Wisconsin to adapt to that kind of city. But it's also been a good experience for us. For the past, since 2004, I've been the acting superintendent for the Northern Philippine Annual Conference. And so I've been involved in leadership development there, helping our churches to sustain themselves and then to focus on a new church planting. For the past 20 years, we also come back now and then. We're not just in the Philippines. We come back. We have a chance to be with a variety of churches. And this is our first time to be here in Motley. But I'm glad to see that there was a potluck. I like to eat. And so and we've had a lot of potlucks through 20 years. You know, as a missionary, in fact, it's a very privileged position because most often you get placed at the head of the line. So you get to go through and you say, yeah, cherry pie, I'll take it. And, you know, and it's a rare thing to just be there week after week. You have to be careful, but it's a lot of fun. On the other hand, because of that experience of being entertained and hosted a great deal, I'm also careful when I watch in the Philippines what happens when people come and they're served food there. I'm always interested what's going to be served, what are the church is going to choose for a particular guest that comes in. I remember a few years back, we had some guests and they, you know, I was looking around to see what was going to come up and I looked over and I kind of did a double take. I realized it was the entire head of a cow served. I mean, it was cooked. It was ready to go. And it was I think we'd been there probably 16 years by then, but it was my first time in all of that time to see the whole head of a cow. We have roast pig, and so it's that I'm used to, the whole pig on the table, but the head of a cow was a first for me. But I thought, well, that'll be a challenge, but I think I could deal with that. Well, then I began to look at some of the various things that we're going to have there. And the 9-year-old son, he began to dish up one of them. And I could see that, you know, they were, well, it was this round, I wasn't sure what it was at first. I began to look and I finally had to ask someone and they said, well, it's cow intestine. Just been boiled and cut up here in 1-inch lengths and served with kind of a sauce there. And I said, that's a first too. I mean, I've had intestine fried, that wasn't so unusual, but this was the first time I had it boiled. So, you know, it was really quite a day. And so I thought to myself, I wonder who's cooking today. This is the first time I've, you know, two surprises in one day. And so I began to ask around, and they said, well, this comes from Dodong and Jeanette Hunyoso. So I finally became acquainted with them, and I asked to hear their story. Well, they told me that they had come to Manila like a lot of people. They wanted a better life. They had grown up in the rural Philippines. And if for us, growing up in this area, we consider farming basically an occupation that you can lead a middle-class life if you're in farming. Some of us will maybe higher or lower on that tier, but essentially we believe that we can provide for ourselves on farming. But you have in the Philippines, you have a few large landowners, and most people are just tenant farmers on those large farms. And so they can look back for the past 6 generations, and they know that their great-grandfathers and great-grandmothers were born in poverty, lived their lives, and died in poverty. And they know that if they stay on that farm, there's nothing at the moment that is going to change that cycle. And so as Dodon looked around him, he said, I don't want to continue that cycle. I want to do something different. I'm going to go off to Manila, whatever that may mean. And he's not alone. 2,500 people come into Manila every week and join the swell the ranks of that city. 2,500 more are born in Manila every week. And so it's a fast growing population. When Dodon came, he had plans. He wanted to be the next Sam Walton. He has a good business sense, and he thought, you know, if I could develop a corporation, if I could, you know, be someone great, I'd like to be known all over the Philippines. Well, at that time, he was unacquainted with what the Word of God said. I'd like to look at Mark chapter 10, verses 41 through 45. Mark chapter 10, verses 41 through 45. We have from the gospel reading here, when the 10 other disciples discovered what James and John had asked, they were indignant. So Jesus called them together and said, "You know that in this world kings are tyrants and officials lord it over the people beneath them. But among you it should be quite different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. For even I, the Son of Man, came here not to be served, but to serve others, and to give my life as a ransom for many." When Dodong arrived, this was pretty much foreign news to him. Far as he knew, he wanted to be in charge. He wanted to be the leader. The problem was he had no money, no place to live, and so it was going to be a difficult start. But one of the things that is always free in the Philippines is land right next to the river. The government owns it. They know that it will flood every year, and so no one is allowed to own that land. But it means also that it's available for squatters. And so people come, and they start out with maybe tin, cardboard, whatever it takes to get a roof over their heads. Eventually, you'll get concrete blocks, and so you can have entire cities built along the rivers. And so Dodong, he joined that group. He was able to get a job. Often take, if just one person in a family of seven, family of 11, can get a job, that's all that it takes to be able to support their family. And he was able to get a job working at a local slaughterhouse. It wasn't exactly Oscar Mayer. There was no refrigeration, but they slaughtered cattle there every night. And his job, after the cattle was slaughtered, was to take it to the wet market, take it out to the public markets where it could be sold at 5 a.m. So it was very fresh. I mean, it went straight from the butcher to your plate all within a very short time. And that was his job every night. Well, eventually, time came when he was able to start building up some capital. And so each week he would say, "Wow, you know, I have a salary here." He says, "How can I make this money? You know, what can I do to become that great man that I like to become, to be the next Sam Walton?" And he looked around and he thought, "I've got it. If I can just choose the right way." So he says, "What are my choices here?" And he said, "Well, over here, okay, they're playing pool. So I could bet on that. Find out, you know, who's going to win and maybe make some money that way. Then there was bingo over here. There was a game, Mahjong, that was here. You had people who were involved in just cards, various card games. And so all along the streets, all along this riverbank where they were at, there were all the various forms of entertainment. The people, if you had one person out of 11 who was working, the other 10 were basically left there all day to find something to do. And so people, entrepreneurs, had set up various ways to gamble. And so he said, "My favorite, I think, is cockfighting. It's a very large sport within the Philippines. You put razor blades on the legs of chickens, and they would fight to the death to see whose cock could win." And so he would take his paycheck and place a large wager on the particular cock, and he would lose. And so week after week, the money that was supposed to be there for their food, for school, and for serving his family was lost. Well, about this time, one of our members down in the Southern Islands had contacted our pastor in Manila, and he says, "You know, I have some family up there, and I don't know how you're going to find them. I just know this is the region, the neighborhood that they're in. Could you please look up Dodong and Jeanette and talk to them and see if you could invite them to church?" And so Pastor Manny Manongso, he got the name. He began to ask around the neighborhood, and sure enough, he was able to find this family, and he invited them to church. They began to attend sporadically for a while, but eventually the day came when they made a decision to give their lives to Jesus Christ. And they followed through with what some of this congregation is going to do today. They wanted to make a public declaration, a baptism. so Dodong and Jeanette, their family, their children were baptized. Well, one of the things that happened is that people began to take notice. And so there was a housing unit next door. And so as Dodong began to, rather than gamble his money, to actually keep his money, he asked him, well, would you take care of this, would you take charge of this housing unit? And so he began to get some capital from taking charge of this housing unit. As he did that, he says, okay, now I actually have some capital here. I'm not spending on cockfighting. And so he began to go out and he would buy the whole cow. He'd go back to the slaughterhouse. He still had kept that original job. So in addition to working with housing, he was over here in the market. And so he would buy the whole cow. He would sell it, send it off to the various markets. But the thing he found is he had pieces left over. People didn't necessarily want the whole cow. And so he thought, you know, I've got these intestines, I have this head, I have these various pieces. What shall I do with it? So he said, let's cook it up. Because for a lot of people, they could easily go for 7 days without meat. And so while this may not be the most choice piece of meat, it was meat. It was a change from a daily diet of rice and vegetables. And so he would cook this up. And in fact, after a while, he had a reputation of the best meat selections around at the right price. And so people were coming. And so this business began to grow. Well, one of the things that was happening, he'd become a part of our fellowship. They were meeting in a high rise, but the rent became more than they could pay. And so Dodong said, well, you know, I've got this, it's not a restaurant, but it's a meeting place where people come and they're able to eat every day. Why don't you come and bring the church plant here? I'm glad to open up my place as a place of worship. And so today, if you were to come back with me, I'm leaving in about a week and a half, so you're welcome to join me. Not necessarily for cow's head, but you're allowed, you know, it'd be great if you could come and sit down in the Carden Dairy, this restaurant with Dodong. And on Sunday, you would see the 80 people that are there every week. Because Dodong discovered Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. It hasn't turned out the way that he necessarily wanted. He hasn't become the next Sam Walton. His name isn't known all over Manila. But he has been able to employ 20 different people now through cutting up the meat, through cooking in the restaurant, for delivering. And a large part of those people are now part of our congregation there. And so he has learned that greatness doesn't necessarily mean that your name has to be all over the newspapers, but it can mean serving one another. And from what I've read in the conference newsletters, from the testimonies I've heard, that's the same kind of things that are happening here under Pastor Jim's leadership, that people here in Motley are finding Jesus Christ as their Savior and making a public declaration that they want to live a different life. Dodong isn't the only person that we've seen come to know the Lord while we've been there in the Philippines. I think of another woman. Her name was Erlinda. She had something in common with Dodong, though. She also liked to gamble. And in fact, she was so good at it that she had become the gambling lord of a particular housing unit. I don't know, I'm not really familiar with the Twin Cities. When I lived in Chicago, we had what was called tenement housing. The U.S. government had built urban housing and attempted to put people there, and then it became gang infested. And so I remember when I lived there, every night I could hear, you know, the latest murder that happened down at Cabrini Green and those kind of places. Well, the Philippines had copied some of the U.S. government's plans, and back in the mid-60s also built tenement housing there in the Philippines. And so this was something that President Marcos at that time was very proud of. You know, there was a ribbon cutting, and the government took care of all the services. Everything was top-notch until 1986. You may remember that was the year that Cory Aquino came in as the new president of the Philippines. Marcos was overthrown, and so there was a brand-new start for many people. But for the people in the tenement housing, it was bad news for them. Because anything associated with Ferdinand Marcos was now, it was on the outs I mean, this was a brand new era. And so this housing was left without people there to maintain it. The water system went out, and so people had to come from the seventh floor and come all the way down to the first floor to carry the water, take it all the way back up for their showers, for bathing, for cooking, for everything. So that here they'd gone from having everything provided to go to this kind of life. As a result, the gangs moved in. People started taking the railings. You had that went down the stairs. They would pull them out. So all you had was the bare concrete. People could fall off the edge as they would go down the stairs. The maintenance wasn't done on the outside any longer. And so you'd have entire walls that you're up on the sixth floor, and you could look out right over the edge. Where Linda lived in this. But it was okay, because she was making a living. She had a place on all seven floors that she was able to make money every day. She had it right in her home, so 24/7 she was able to make money. But then she noticed one day that there was an American who had moved in. And she was really quite surprised. One, what was he doing here? And two, she couldn't figure out that there were kids who would follow him everywhere he went. He had turned out he was involved in some different children's ministries. There were some people in California who had asked him, would you look up my relatives? And so when he had arrived there, he did look them up, and they convinced him to actually stay and begin to minister in that tenement housing. So he had stayed. So she thought, well, anything that attracts kids, I'm interested in. I want to know what's going on. And so as she became involved in the Bible studies, became involved in the worship services, she did what many of you have done. She gave her life to Jesus Christ and confirmed that with baptism. Well, today she's a part of a congregation there of 80 people that are meeting every Sunday. It's not the most beautiful worship center. It's just in a hallway off of one of the apartments. So they just every week come together, put up the curtains, bring in the pulpit, and set up the chairs, and tear it all back down after the Sunday worship. But at least they're able to do that. As I think of those two people, they're just two examples of the many people who have come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior over the past 20 years. And when I look at our nowadays, I can even look online and I can see, you know, what Motley is giving toward our support. And so I've appreciated every month that your church's name is there consistently. And this morning, now that I have the opportunity to actually be here, to see you face to face, to look you in the eye, I want to say thank you for your support, to say thank you on the behalf of the people who have been able to become a part of our churches, not only in Manila, but throughout the Philippines over the past 20 years, as you have given to missionaries like ourselves and to the others that you support. I also want to say thank you for the support that's been given toward the country shares. Each of our countries receive money for church planning, for theological education, for the Bible colleges, and as you have given towards that church planting doesn't just happen. Churches just don't spring up out of, you know, it takes work. It takes funds. It takes someone who, a pastor, a family who is willing to give their lives to see that happen. And so as funds have been made available here from our U.S. churches, as they've been invested there in church planting, we've been able to see over four churches come just in the past, since 2003, in the Manila area and throughout the Philippines. So we're able to see another 10% growth this past year. And it was a joy to be a part of that. But times change, and one of the things that I've been asked to do now is to switch my focus to Southeast Asia. We'll still be based in the Philippines, but starting August, I'll be ministering within Southeast Asia. That would be, remember, all seven countries that the Free Methodist Church is now involved in. It would be Vietnam, Laos, Myanmar, Malaysia, Thailand, Malaysia. I think there's still one more. Cambodia. Yes, there we go. I'll think of an acronym so I can get them all down here. So that's, unlike the Philippines, though, most of them are very small works. It's been our joy. When we first came 20 years ago, The Philippines had 2 annual conferences. Today, they have 5 annual conferences, which now form a general conference. They have their own bishop. So they're now, previously, a U.S. bishop would come over. He would chair the various meetings. Now, we have our own bishop that's able to take care of the various things that go on there. And so part of our vision, now as we look at Southeast Asia, is to be able to see that same kind of thing happen, to come alongside, to encourage, to bring personnel, to bring finance, to help them do what it takes to take the gospel. When we went out 20 years ago, there was only one country in Southeast Asia the Free Methodist Church was in, and that was the Philippines. Today, we have 7, with more contacts in Indonesia to follow up to, I hope, will be become 8. Asia, 20 years ago, the Free Methodist Church had 35,000 members. Today, we have 230,000 members in Asia. And so God is doing great things, and that's one of the reasons that we're having to regionalize, to give greater supervision. But you have been a part of that. As you have prayed, as you have given, it's not just, although we're there in person, it comes as a result of your sacrifice, the way that you've invested in our lives and the other missionaries that you're acquainted with. One of the ways that you can still keep in contact, back on the back table, you can pick up the latest copy of our World Missions magazine. It has a short summary of all our missionaries, Free Methodist missionaries around the world, the various countries that we're working in. You'll also find a copy of our prayer card. It's somewhat outdated. My kids have grown up a little bit since this one was taken, so we're working to get a new one, but this still gives some idea of what our family looks like. And you'll also find a prayer card that you can sign up that just basically says, I'll commit to pray for the Wilsons, and we commit in turn to pray for you, to send regular updates on what's happening in our ministry. And so we'd be glad to do that. If you just fill it out and hand it back to me, I'll be glad to add you to our mailing list. But when you think of what it means to be great, or Linda thought she was great when she was a gambling lord, thought there couldn't be a better life, but now she's helping to bring her fellow neighbors and friends to Christ. So we don't have to be Sam Walton. We don't have to be the next person to lead a company. But we do have the opportunity here in Motley, as we do around the world, to share the good news. And I want to thank you for your part in bringing that good news to the Philippines and now to Southeast Asia. Thank you for the opportunity to share, Brother Jim.